there are so many different ways that people can gain skills. And frankly, the biggest way people gain skills is on the job.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable healthcare.
I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward Foundation. In this episode, Byron Auguste, CEO and co-founder of Opportunity at Work, and David Sutphin, Chief Strategy and Engagement Officer for 2U, joined us for a discussion of skills and opportunity gaps, the public and private sector's roles in the future of work, and how the small business community can connect with workforce talent. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this podcast on the future of work and America's skills gap. I'm pleased to welcome David Sutphin and Byron Auguste to today's conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll let you take it away, Byron.
Yes, thanks, Liz. So I'm Byron Auguste. I'm the CEO of Opportunity at Work. We are a nonprofit social enterprise that works with employers and training providers and technology companies and communities across the country to really close what we see as the opportunity gap in work. And, you know, when we think about the future of work, a great place to start is the present of work, because in fact, the way we get to the future is starting from the present and either keeping the way we're doing or changing what we're doing. And one of the big facts about the present of work is that talent comes in all shapes and sizes. You know, honestly, talent is pretty equally distributed in communities and opportunity is not. And in particular, one dimension of that is that people can learn in more ways than ever now. They can learn new skills and people want new skills. All the data shows that. But the way they get jobs increasingly is through hiring processes that are pretty algorithmic, that are pretty paint by numbers. And while, of course, employers want skills and they want talent, they understand the uniqueness of people, the actual process screens people out early in the process if they lack certain characteristics. And one of the biggest ones is a bachelor's degree. And honestly, only 40% of American adults have bachelor's degrees, but almost 70% of jobs are saying you got to have a bachelor's degree to apply. So obviously that is a real disconnect. And a lot of what we do is to help employers who want to move beyond the degree and actually hire less on pedigree and more on skills to find a way to do that, that really does reflect learning, because of course learning is still fundamental to this, but doesn't screen people out, rather figuring out what are the ways that they can screen people in. And so we help employers with that. We connect different training pathways there, including community colleges and, you know, working learning pathways and many others. And then frankly, we help them to work through the bottlenecks they might face in doing that and bring an ecosystem together. So that's the role we play.
Thanks so much, David. I'd love to hear your thoughts as well.
Well, first, Liz and Byron, excited to be with both of you today to have what is obviously a very timely and important conversation about the future of work and the skills gap. And so, you know, David Sutphin, I'm the Chief Strategy and Engagement Officer at 2U. For those of you who don't know 2U, we power a whole suite of online degrees, boot camps, short courses in partnership with some of the great nonprofit universities around the United States and the world. And I guess what excites me about this conversation is it's very clear that we're, as Byron was saying, we're at this moment where there is this gap between what employers need, what a lot of people are looking to do in their careers. But as Byron said, there's actually more opportunity to close that gap by not requiring people to have to go back and get a four-year degree, but to just top off the skills and the relevant workforce related skills that they need. And so, you know, Byron has been at the intersection of these policy issues for a significant part of his professional career. And I'm, you know, excited to offer the perspective that 2U brings to this conversation in terms of what we're doing to fill some of those skills gaps. And just to give a little bit more pointed kind of context on that, we currently partner with over 45 nonprofit universities around the United States in 28 different states, helping them offer tech skills-based boot camps in 8 different disciplines. So data analytics, UX, UI, cyber, fintech, project management, product management. And these are the kinds of skills that are in demand. About 30% of the students who attend the boot camps that we power do not have college degrees. So there's a lot of overlap between the audience that Byron is serving and the audience that we're helping kind of close that skills gap. So look forward to the conversation. And you know, hopefully we can provide everyone who's listening today with a kind of a better understanding of what the landscape looks like and what some of the solutions might be going forward.
Thank you both so much. I really appreciate that overview of what's happening today and the role you each play in the space. So I'd like to first dig into what we mean when we talk about the skills gap itself. So Byron, do you mind kicking us off by addressing how employers are currently evaluating skills? You just mentioned at the top, bachelor's degrees as a screen. Who are they excluding in their current definition of the skills that they're looking for?
Right, well, the skills gap is a really pretty slippery concept. And part of the challenge in talking about it is it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And the implications of those different meanings are quite different. So in the very most simplistic way, when people talk about a skills gap, they might be saying, you know, more people should get STEM degrees, say, or more people, you know, clearly there are skills that are in more demand as, you know, the application of different technology is even specific technology platforms become more ubiquitous. There are definitely a set of skills and competencies that become more important over time in different fields. And those are shifting all the time, right? There's thousands of different jobs. So in a way, you can say, well, of course there's a skills gap. I mean, I have a skills gap between what I know now and what I need to know in 6 months in order to accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish. So in that sense, we all have a skills gap and we're all continuously learning. But what that sometimes translated into is, well, we need more people that have these specific degrees. And again, like getting these degrees, particularly if they're specific technical degrees and so forth, might very well impart a set of skills that are valuable. But there are so many different ways that people can gain skills. And frankly, the biggest way people gain skills is on the job. So in a way, if you say, oh, you need to have a series of degrees that, you know, are time consuming or expensive and people's lives are complicated and loads of people aren't in a position to get those before we can have you work and learn additional skills, well, we really are kind of defining our way into a skills gap. And so I think that the really valuable way to think about this gap is, yes, what skills do you need as an employer and how are the sources that you're tapping into delivering those for you? There probably is a gap there, but instead of just saying, woe is me, I can't get it out of those sources, why don't you widen the sources and consider more people and find ways to evaluate the skills of people you haven't been looking at. So we talk about people who are skilled through alternative routes. If a company is mainly looking at campus recruiting or then maybe executive recruiting, you know, sort of poaching from other companies, well, there are a whole set of alternative routes that they haven't necessarily considered. Those might include community colleges for some. Those might include boot camps and some of the short courses that David is talking about that are delivered in a variety of ways. More and more that's coming in blended learning. And whereas, you know, online learning might have been seen as a little bit out of the mainstream, well, in the COVID era, it's gone straight into the mainstream. So that's the idea. Look to alternative routes for skills.
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. Byron obviously mentions online learning. I mean, that's what we do. That's our bread and butter. And what we have found is, you know, a lot of the folks who are looking to make a career pivot, whether that's reskilling or upskilling, you know, a lot of these folks are working, obviously, as a result of COVID. There are more people who are actually out of the workforce and are looking to re-enter it. But the point is the ability to offer people the flexibility of pursuing that kind of additional skills-based training while they're working or if they're not working, and recognizing that, yeah, there will always be areas where getting a degree is necessary. You know, there's lots of licensure-based disciplines, but every industry has a mix of career opportunities that either require degrees or alternative credentials. And I think what's exciting, and you know, we talk a lot about the tech sector. Well, what's happening with digital transformation, which has obviously been accelerated across almost every single facet of society as a result of COVID, is a lot of the kinds of skills that tech companies have historically always needed, you're seeing pretty much every company, regardless of whether it's quote unquote a tech company, now needing. And what's interesting about those skills is they can be demonstrated. And so that's really what a lot of the boot camps that we power offer people is you actually learn the skill that you need in order to do the job, which is the reason why what we find in our boot camps is regardless of whether somebody comes to us with a college degree or without a college degree, if they master the curriculum and, equally important, they do all of the softer skill things that are associated with landing a job, whether that's making sure that their portfolio is put together. And when I say portfolio, I mean the applied examples of the work that they've learned, their LinkedIn profile, they've done interview prep, they know how to put their resume together. Individuals who come into our boot camps with high school diplomas and without college degrees, and those who have college degrees, have the same outcomes from a career placement perspective. So it's a combination of mastering the applied skills, being able to demonstrate those, ensuring that you're going through the interview process in a way that sets you up to be successful, what we call employer ready and employer competitive. And if that's the case, you can really get a job that puts you on a pathway to a sustainable middle class career. And I think that's what we all want. And it shouldn't just be large companies that are able to do that. It's, you know, small companies as well. And it can be more difficult for small companies. And I know that's something that, you know, we can dig in on a bit, but I think there's real opportunity, you know, going forward to create these kinds of pathways. And actually, Byron, love to hear you talk a little bit about, you know, your point about administrative assistance, where, you know, a lot of companies say you need a college degree, but, you know, there's a lot of really successful people in those roles who do not have college degrees.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of roles that fit that description where you can define a set of skills, but they can come in so many different formats. And one really useful way of thinking about them are roles that tend to be horizontal that you see in a lot of different businesses. So for example, administrative assistants, one pathway that we've seen be quite successful is administrative assistants to project management, right? Because a lot of the skill sets are very much transferable. And Opportunity at Work did, along with some academic and research partners, work looking at 130 million job transitions over the last 10 years. And where are the pathways by which people were moving very much along lines of skills from what we call origin jobs to gateway jobs to destination jobs? And there were 51 gateway jobs, which are jobs that were kind of on the low end of middle wage, perhaps, but where there was quite a bit of upward mobility into other higher paid jobs and quite a bit of porousness. You could move into these gateway jobs from a lot of lower wage jobs, and you could move up from them into some higher wage jobs. So administrative assistant was a very good example of that. They would go to project management. You would see that in customer support, you know, sort of like, you know, telesales, where you could move towards like a higher paid sales role. And there's a lot of sales roles. People don't think about that so much as a career path, but they're a tremendous number. And if you're good at it, those are really good jobs typically. And so that's another pathway. And then everything we talk about in IT and technology and software, because the truth of the matter is you can learn to code. And if you can code, you can show it. And that is incredibly important. And it's important not just for the tech industry, as David was saying, but because really most middle wage jobs are becoming tech enabled jobs in some way. So it's not that the job is a technology job. Technology is not the point, but technology is a very important part of the tool set. And it's actually kind of rare today that an upwardly mobile pathway doesn't require some kind of mastery of a tech enabled workflow at minimum.
One thing I would add to that is maybe about a year and a half or so ago, you know, McKinsey did a study that looked specifically at, which is Byron's old employer, at some of the jobs that are most at risk of automation, with a particular focus in that case on, you know, where a lot of the Black workforce is. And so, you know, you saw that a disproportionately large number of Black men might be in an industry like transportation, so truck driving, other things, but the skills that they have would lend themselves to potentially make a pivot to go work as a supply chain, you know, manager at a Amazon warehouse or the like. So it's both, as Byron was saying, like understanding where those skill overlaps naturally align, and then figuring out, you know, what's the gap that you might need to get you from here to there. Because, you know, if somebody's brings their A game to work every day, and they're willing to learn some new skills. And that's why I think it's the combination of all of these pieces together, which is why, you know, I think one of the things that we think is exciting about our university partner network is a lot of the tech skills-based boot camps in the United States. And just to give people a sense, our boot camps are 12 weeks long if you go full-time, and they're 24 weeks long if you go part-time. a lot of boot camp providers are just in the major urban markets, right? You know, they're in New York and San Francisco and Chicago. Well, as I said earlier, you know, we have 45 university partners spread all around the United States in 28 different states. So, you know, University of Utah, you know, Case Western Reserve, University of Connecticut, University of Richmond. And each of those communities has an ecosystem of both large and small employers who are looking for people with these kinds of skills. And so the ability to create a way to help reskill communities all around the country is, I think, also part of the solution here.
That's a great segue into the next batch of questions I was hoping to talk about with you all. So I'd like to pivot to hiring. We've talked about the folks who can benefit from the training programs themselves. Now let's switch over to the employers. We see a lot of large companies making splashy hiring commitments or retraining pledges in the news, but smaller businesses tend to have fewer resources and they often want to hire locally. They're not looking outside of their local market. So I have a question from a business leader in Oregon that I'd love to just share with you, and then we can kick it off from there. So Cliff asks, is there a trend towards hiring based on experience or skills rather than degrees earned, which we've touched on a little bit? If yes, then in what careers or businesses, and will that trend continue? So that's from a small business leader who clearly is interested in the conversation today. So my first question is, how do these differences in resources between large and small employers impact hiring in this space?
Well, in our experience at Opportunity at Work, large employers tend to have complex hiring systems, right? Sort of many channels. It's at a very large scale. It's highly tech enabled. And small employers, again, it depends on the size of the employer. There's obviously a spectrum, but you know, the smallest employers tend to hire mainly through sweat equity. They might not even have a recruiting budget per se. And so they are, it's not that they're not using tools and posting jobs on some of the job boards. They probably are, but they also are trying to use their networks. They might show up at a local job fair. And in my experience, small employers tend to be actually very open-minded. You know, if they have a sense that someone can do the job, there are fewer things that tend to get in the way in a small company than in a big company, you know. And so I think small companies are honestly one of the real opportunities to kind of lead the way. Now, the challenge in small companies leading is that it's not their needs that tend to define, you know, the main hiring platforms. If they, you know, say, hey, we're here to hire, they're not going to get 10,000 people showing up to apply for their job like some of the bigger companies would. And so I think there's a real benefit. And this is a lot of how Opportunity at Work thinks about it as an ecosystem. So we do work with some of the big companies to get them to open up lanes in their hiring where if you can do the job, you can get the job regardless, right, of your degree background and so forth. And to have some systems that are then available to small companies to plug into. And I think what that gives small companies is not typically, oh, we could hire people without degrees, because I think most small companies actually kind of know that, unless, as David said, they're in a field that is, you know, that really does require it from a licensure or whatever. But it really gives them a much wider ability to sort of tap in to a talent pool, because some of the big companies, if they say, hey, we're open to hiring people who are stars, who are skilled through alternative routes, a lot of people will show up with a lot of talent. Most of them won't be hired by those big companies, but the small companies in the area can actually hire loads and loads of them. So I think that combination of big companies and small companies, if you want to talk about systems change to make this trend something, because there is a trend towards skills-based hiring, but I think you need to meet in the middle between the big companies who have really turned their systems into very pedigree-driven engines, and they are now walking that back and trying to find systemic ways to do skills-based hiring, and then connect that somehow to the small businesses who never really did create these super complex systems, but also don't have the same ability to tap into a really robust talent pool. And I think there's a way to engineer that where it's actually very much a win for all sides.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting in a weird way. I would argue that what Byron is talking about and what I think to you in partnership with our university partners brings to the table as it relates to engaging employers is not unlike what Business Forward does, right? So like, if you think about it, you know, Business Forward is a combination of, there are some big companies that are, you know, collaborators and partners to Business Forward, but the whole point of Business Forward is to provide a platform and an opportunity for small business leaders like you to engage and be part of the conversation. And so it's conceptually a very similar approach. And so part of what I think we bring to the table is we bring scale, and scale oftentimes enables you to create efficiencies and to do things either for free or at a lower cost than you would be if you didn't have enough scale. So let me give you a good example. Last year, we did over 10,000 free referrals of students who had graduated from our boot camps to employers. So it was free to the student and free to the employer. You say, well, how could it be free to the employer? Well, the reason why it's free to the employer is because we say to employers, your feedback is our currency. If we send you someone's resume and you choose not to interview them, we want to know why. Is it because the fonts in the resume were wrong, or is it because the technical skills weren't strong enough? And then we use that feedback to inform both what's taught in the classroom, but also to then give students who are enrolled in the programs that we power on behalf of our university partners more insight into this is what your resume needs to look like if you're interviewing for this kind of job. Employers love it, large and small, because it's free to them. So, you know, Google may come and recruit 4 times a year out of our employer network because they're hiring in, you know, markets all over the country, but it also enables that small employer in, you know, Ohio or Utah or Virginia, who's only got 50 employees and maybe is only going to hire 2 or 3 people, but really needs somebody with cyber skills because they're now worried about cybersecurity, to also get access to this same pipeline of talent for free. But to Byron's point, that pipeline wouldn't probably be there and it wouldn't be growing if it wasn't for the gravitational force that the IBMs and the, you know, the Accentures and the Deloittes and the others who might be hiring 50, 60, 70, 80 people a year. So it's kind of a win-win scenario. And I think to Byron's earlier point, that's why you need to think about these things as ecosystems and systems, because if you have all the right pieces to the puzzle in an ecosystem, you should be able to design it in a way that, you know, every participant in that ecosystem is getting value out of it. And I think that's what's exciting. And, you know, I do genuinely believe, you know, people could argue that our workforce system, putting aside college degree, has not worked for a very long time. And it does feel to me like we're at a moment where there's a real chance to make an impact.
That's so helpful to hear about the ecosystem and the feedback loops that you all are really focusing in on. So I would love to talk about solutions and who else needs to be at the table to create these ecosystems that you're talking about. So let's get a little more granular about it. If you all could give me an example of a place that maybe you've worked in or you have some data on of how your solutions are working on the ground and who else need to be at the table with you, policymakers, big companies, what helps actually make this work?
Well, we tend to work with participants in the ecosystem. So there are, for example, there really are a lot around the country, very good training programs that are not four-year degrees or education programs that don't result in a four-year degree. For example, we've done a lot of work in Rhode Island. And in Rhode Island, the Community College of Rhode Island, which is one system, it's several campuses, has an associate's degree in computer science. And then the campus in Newport, it has a cybersecurity certificate. And so it's in one part of the state, it's the cybersecurity certificate, where the nuclear boat and submarine industry has been hiring people from this program, giving them internships, shaping the curriculum for a long time. When a few years ago, the banking industry in Providence, right, was like looking for cybersecurity, they went over and over and over trying to kind of recruit from Boston universities and trying to lure them down to Rhode Island, which they sometimes did. They had very, you know, relatively low retention, et cetera. While literally 35 miles away, you had this really successful cybersecurity program. And part of this is when I talk about an ecosystem, like there was a set of employers, I mean, I literally like 40, 45 miles away that did not know about this resource and really wasn't tapping into it. And yet there were other employers who had used it successfully and had validated it. So what happened? So the combination of, we were working both with Governor Gina Raimondo and the different kind of business associations and the various training programs. And it became clear that those skill sets were in high demand. And Governor Raimondo actually added to the appropriations bill to expand the seats for cybersecurity there, which would have been not necessarily a good idea had more employers not learned about it, but you can do it. So there was a role there. In that case, that was publicly funded education. but it was a recognition that there was this area of demand and that there could be a match, and you needed business at the table, and not just business generically, you needed, you know, multiple industries, multiple, you know, geographies, and you needed the public sector, and then you needed some intermediation. You needed some ability, because businesses can hire more inclusively, and they should, but businesses are not going to make it their business to say, well, we didn't hire them, but maybe some of these other folks might want to hire them. But actually, that's one of the most powerful ways. Like, if somebody doesn't have an advanced degree, but gets to the final round of interviewing with JPMorgan Chase, they probably have a lot of skills that some of the people listening in small businesses might want to hire them, right? And so, but finding ways for that kind of information to kind of get through and to make that process easier is something that we work on a lot. And you know, there's technology available to do that, marketplace, you know, multi-sided marketplaces and the like. But you got to, as you say, Liz, you got to bring it down to the level where we're frankly a small business where people are very busy and they don't necessarily have even a dedicated single person to hiring, can plug in pretty efficiently. And I think that's where we're all trying to work towards getting the solution to that level.
Yeah, I guess what I would add to that, I'll give you a state specific example. So take a state like Ohio, you know, middle of the country, you know, we've got two partners in that state, Case Western Reserve University, which is in Cleveland, and the Ohio State University College of Engineering. Pains me to say that because I'm a Michigan grad, but, you know, together at Case Western Reserve, we've got coding, cybersecurity, and data analytics boot camps. And then Ohio State's a newer partner, so it's just recently launched coding and cybersecurity. But just to give people a sense of scale, so in the last few years, had close to 1,000 students enroll into those boot camps. Some of those students are still enrolled. We've done close to 600 employer referrals out of the boot camps, and we have 128 different companies across the state of Ohio that have hired graduates from the boot camps. Some of them large employers, you know, with 3,000-4,000, and some of them, you know, with less than 50 employees. So to your question, Liz, about like, what can you do? And this goes, I think, a little bit to Byron's point, which is once you have critical mass and the like essential elements, it's like, what does it take to have, you know, life on Earth? You need water, you need like, what are the essential elements? And then once you have them, like some intentionality in bringing those together. So what we're starting to do is bring together companies across our network, identifying the ones who've done a really good job of the hard work that Byron talked about at the beginning of this conversation, which is actually figuring out how to hire for skills versus degrees or proxies for skills, and then having them share some of their perspectives on how they made those pivots and transitions. And then the other thing that I would say is, and you know, again, this is the beauty of an ecosystem, is the more employers you have and the more learners you have, the richer and more valuable that network becomes. Because to, you know, Byron's point about the person who maybe doesn't get the job at JP Morgan is exactly the person that another person in that ecosystem might need and want to hire. So I think, you know, we're looking to figure out a way to really cultivate these regional hubs, because at the end of the day, even for big companies that have a nationwide footprint, they're still thinking about their hiring strategies from a regional perspective. It's the reason why a lot of big tech companies have now decided to put satellite presences in Atlanta, because they want to diversify their workforce. And they know that Atlanta has a rich talent pool of, you know, Black and Hispanic talent. And so they're like, let's go where there's more talent of the kind that we're looking for from a diversity and demographic perspective. So
yeah, and I would also add, I think smaller or mid-sized businesses can use the fact that they don't need to hire massive numbers to make their own hiring processes a little bit more a fit for what they're actually looking for and what the situation is in their region. And there's all sorts of ways to do that. I mean, we tend to focus on folks who don't have bachelor's degrees, but have sort of you know, been in the armed forces, have like learned on the job through these gateway jobs, for example, and who, you know, had this kind of training and it had a lot of success. But I remember talking to the CEO of an, you know, mid-size to small optics kind of components company and in upstate New York. And one of the things they did is they built a competency in really being a great place to work for older workers, because they found that it was actually harder to compete, right, for the fresh college grads with, you know, businesses that are kind of in the bigger cities with, you know, more of a youth kind of cultural life. But like, there were a lot of people who knew what they were doing, you know, and who
they were our age.
Yeah, who didn't, who, and who yeah, but who wanted, like, yeah, they were, they had a family, they had settled down, and, or even their kids were gone. They were more in the tail end of their career. And there was this sort of assumption that, no, you couldn't hire someone like that sort of in the middle. Cause like, but of course you could, if you make it a place that's friendly to them. And they got great skills. They got much better retention, right, than when they were trying to compete with, you know, Boston and New York City and whatever for 20 somethings. And in general, if you try to hire people based on a set of criteria that everybody else is using, if like everybody's trying to get like, quote unquote, the top 10%, blah, 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 according to some single hierarchy, well, by definition, only 10% can get 10%, right? And if you hire the most poachable person you can get to work for you, don't be surprised when they leave in 15 months. And it really matters, especially, again, many mid-sized businesses are in a supply chain. They have a very specific set of things that people need to learn. So it matters that they get somebody who wants to do that job, who thinks it's a great job, and who's there to learn and build. So I think it's really underestimated the degree to which there's real value in fit rather than some notion of hierarchy of, you know, who's the most, you know, the quote best hire is often not, the best hire by that standard is actually very often not the best hire for your company.
So we have small business leaders listening in to this conversation, and I would love to wrap up by just making sure you can address any best practices that you think that they can bring home with them and for their next hiring wave, or resources you'd like them to be aware of.
Sure, I'll start on that one. And you know, to the extent that there's anybody listening who is interested in recruiting out of all of the boot camps that I was talking about that we power, you know, you're welcome to, you know, reach out. We have a industry partnerships team. You know, it's industrypartnerships@2u.com. But I guess what I would say is, over the course of the last several weeks, we've seen, you know, in Washington, Byron mentioned Gina Raimondo, who used to be the governor of Rhode Island. Well, she's now the Secretary of Commerce. We have, you know, the leadership on the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee just put out a request for comments for like what's working out there. So what I would encourage you to do is, if you're a small business leader, is our company is headquartered in Prince George's County, Maryland, and the local workforce board there, Employ Prince George's, is, you know, deeply involved in a lot of these conversations in terms of how to create an ecosystem in the local community. So if you aren't already connected with that part of at least local government, I would encourage you to do that. And then, as I would say, more and more institutions of higher education across the country are realizing that they have to expand beyond just traditional four-year degrees and are moving into these alternative credential areas. And at least all of our partners, we tend to partner with the continuing ed schools mostly, and sometimes the engineering schools. So the other thing I would say is to Byron's point, you know, sometimes you may not realize that there actually is an education provider in your community who's producing some of this kind of talent. So I would spend some time, you know, doing some assessment of what that local landscape looks like.
Yeah, I would add that certainly in most cities or, you know, decent sized counties, there are business associations or parts of business associations that do care about these issues. And the National Skills Coalition has a network of sort of business leaders in different parts of the country. And some of the best collaboratives I've seen have come out of that. In the public workforce system, there are some real gems. You know, the San Diego Workforce Partnership is actually an excellent place in that area for businesses. And there's examples. I mean, there are strengths and weaknesses of different those systems. And by the way, the strengths come often when businesses get more engaged, right, and help to shape them. So someone who's very motivated, I'd encourage checking that out. And there are typically strong community college programs, not that every program is, but there are kind of great examples. And so I think all of that is true. But in addition, now, given all the potential there is for the, you know, the kind of programs David's talking about, for-profit, not-for-profit, et cetera, one of the things to think about is whether, when you have someone in your company who's very motivated, who's a learner, who's done all these things, why not combine some training that they get, right, with the view, like they want to stay at your company, but they also want to grow. And I think there's a lot of companies have underestimated the ability of their frontline workers who are doing a great job, but maybe in jobs that pay less, they want to move up. Very often they have to leave their company, and very often they have to leave their town. in order to move up and get that extra learning and advance in their careers. And when Opportunity at Work takes the data we've done on STARS, which is very detailed on, you know, the skills they have and the pathways they travel, a lot of the best conversations we have with companies, we start off about hiring, but then they say, you know, we've got a lot of these people working for us today. What about if we help them, you know, get these skills and move up within our company? And even if in the end they don't stay in your company, to the extent that if you're in a region and you want to build a workforce in a region, well, some of them might stay at your company. Others might go to other companies. If other companies are doing the same to build their workforce, they might come to your company. And so I think there's really more that a set of businesses who are willing to work together can accomplish. I think it's pretty hard to solve this problem in silos. I think it's pretty hard to solve this problem by accident, but I think you really can solve this problem working together and doing it on purpose.
With that, thank you, Byron and David.
Thank you everyone for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle. Produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanen. Special thanks to Jana Platt. Thanks for listening. See you next time.